You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Juneteenth is the oldest known celebration commemorating the end of slavery in the United States. And if you haven't heard of it before, you're not the only one. So let's take things back to the January of 1863, when the Emancipation Proclamation was made. President Abraham Lincoln's executive order freed slaves in the Confederacy if states didn't rejoin the Union by the new year. In reality, the proclamation did little to actually free slaves, but it was a huge symbolic power, and it eventually led to the abolition of slavery, which you may know as the 13th Amendment. Now, it's important to remember that freeing slaves was a gradual process, and it took almost 2.5 years for that news to finally get down to Texas. On June 19th of 1865, Union soldiers made their way to Galveston, Texas. They told more than 250,000 slaves that they were free. That's where the name Juneteenth comes from. It's a combination of June and 19th. For many, it's like an Independence Day, and it's celebrated all around the country. It became an official state holiday in Texas by 1980, and it's grown in popularity ever since. People have parades, barbecues, pop fireworks, and fellowship with one another. It's really just a day to celebrate freedom and acknowledge achievement in the Black community.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation. This is Todd Urey, founder of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. And you know, I have so many things that we're doing in the network right now. We're really trying to concentrate on growing a technology-driven podcast about different technologies that are really taking shape and transforming the infrastructure of healthcare. One that we just did, that we released, that I want everyone to take a listen to, it's very interesting, is the drug tracking and tracing and verification, which we had two executives from Ledger Domain come on. And I didn't even understand what blockchain was before really getting into the pharmacy industry. And now it's really opened my eyes to the capabilities of passing data with authority from one sector to another. And I think in the healthcare record, that's gonna mean a lot. So go listen to that episode. I'm gonna have it in your show notes with our episode today. It was released on June 18th. I also want to mention the impact of artificial intelligence and drug development, Emerge. We had Dan from Emerge come on. Really interesting episode. And I want us to all think of how do we better utilize technology to make our positions and our jobs, and you out there, you being a pharmacist, how does technology make things more difficult, but how does it also make it easier? Today's episode is not about technology. I think it's something more close to our hearts, definitely close to my heart, as well as our very special guest who's the first time on the Pharmacy Podcast Nation, Dr. Stephanie Young Moss. Welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
First of all, everyone, if you're in your car, you're jogging, lifting weights, or whatever you're doing, obviously you don't have access to your phone right now. And if you're occupied, then don't. But I'm going to have in the show notes this website. This website is so dynamic, and I think it is very professional. And I'm actually, I've shown this website to three other people, two of them in pharmacy, one of them out of pharmacy. But it's Dr. Stephanie
Yomo.
So
yeah, so that's Young Moss, Yomo.
Okay. Dr. Stephanie Yomo.com. Who designed this website for you? Because this thing looks great.
Actually, a very talented young lady named Angelica, and she happens to be my sister.
Wow.
So AngelicaDizelle.com. That's my sister, and she does this full time. And I actually hired her to make my website.
That's terrific. It looks terrific.
Thank you.
So you are a mom, you're a wife, you're a pharmacist, you are passionate, you're a leader, you take ownership of not only what you do as a pharmacist, but some of the passion that you have. We are in a very weird state of the nation, a time in our history. We've never been through a pandemic ever, so this is the first time we're in a pandemic. Then we lob on of an unfortunate event with George Floyd dying, being murdered by the police officer that did so. It has raised up all of these emotions. It has brought racism to the forefront. And I've read some of the blogging that you're doing and some of your writings, so I had to get you on the show because I wanted to open this up. I don't want us to hide from it. We have 70,000 plus some listeners out there. We have African-American pharmacists. We have Latino pharmacists, Chinese pharmacists, German pharmacists, whatever. I want to talk about this. I don't want to hide behind my microphone and not talk about this. So I kind of want to open the floor up to you. Share with our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, and then you and I, let's just sit here as if we were in front of each other and just talk as healthcare professionals.
No, okay, great. So Todd, like you said, it is a unfortunate event that has turned into a very necessary movement. And I think that being the age that we are, our parents have gone through this, but we have not. So I think that we are in an unknown space where we don't know how to feel. We don't know what to say. Some people are walking on eggshells. I had a lot of people that reach out to me when they don't even know what to say in some of their social media posts because they are just afraid of either hurting someone's feeling or making someone feel bad or saying the wrong thing. So I think we're just in a very sensitive space, like you said.
Yep.
But I am a pharmacist by training. I've been a pharmacist for just over 20 years. I started my career in compliance area in industry. And from there, I went from industry to managed care for several years. And then I went back to industry to work in health economics and outcomes research. And during all of that time, I've sort of touched on health equity, disparities, in some of my volunteer work, and also sort of bringing that into my workplace as well, and different things that I can do, whatever I can do to actually impact some of that through my work, then I would try to do it. Either talking to my manager about ways that we can increase enrollment of people of color in studies, or making sure that we're touching certain communities that may not know about certain disease states. So I would try to bring that work into my corporate America as well.
So what position, I always try to divide pharmacy up into five pharmacy sectors, and I probably have done this to myself so many times that I might want to refigure how to put pharmacy in buckets. But so I say community pharmacy, I say long-term care, specialty, compounding, and health system. Health system covers basically hospital pharmacy. So in those buckets, where have you had experience as a pharmacist?
I've worked in community. So when I first, of course, through our pharmacy school, I worked in community. But when I first graduated, I did part-time for community while I worked in industry. So did you say industry at all? Did you say that?
No, and I think we're identifying industry as if you were working as an MSL, as a medical science liaison for like a pharma company, right?
Yes. Yes.
All right, so I have to start adding. I have to start saying.
Yeah, you got to add. You have to add on industry. And then also managed care. I don't know where managed care will land as well.
Well, couldn't managed care fit in almost all of them? You could think.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, it could, because you're right. Because I did touch, when I was in managed care, I would have to touch the health system pharmacists and also community as well when it comes to coverage. So yeah, that could kind of touch all of them.
So I've worked in specialty, community, long-term care. I've never worked in health system. Little bit touched compounding. And then I guess industry, because we've worked with ACMA, the ACMA, who's the accreditation body for medical science liaisons and some other they're doing. Susie Solomon. And
her husband, Susie. That.
Yeah. The pharmacist mom.
Yeah. I know her. Yeah. So I guess I have worked in community, managed care, industry, and within those I've touched specialty pharmacy as well. So a lot of different areas now that I really think about it.
So your own experience as a Black educated very powerful woman because you come off so confident, which is attractive in people. I always look for people to kind of bond with that are confident in themselves without being cocky. I can't stand cocky people. It's a turnoff, obviously. But I like the people that are confident in themselves. And you just exude that, though. Pictures of you, the way
Thank
that
you
read, the way that you talk. So describe to me something that I don't understand as a middle-aged white guy who hasn't experienced in my own professionalism. I have experienced bias in not being a pharmacist, by the way. People are like, wait a second, you run a podcast about pharmacy, you're not a pharmacist. I'm like,
it's good. It's a different perspective, so I like that. That's okay.
Or being 5'7". I've had that issue too.
But we're the same height.
There you go. But just give our listeners some insights and some of your own as a healthcare professional, as a pharmacist, even when you said to your dad or your mom or your uncle or your friend, hey, I want to be a pharmacist, how that was received, how it was, you know, interpreted. Was it positive? Was it negative? But take us through that, because I really kind of want to dig into this subject, because I have some other questions for you regarding healthcare disparities too.
Well, when I told my family I wanted to be a pharmacist, and I will be honest, at first my goal was to be a pediatrician. That's what I wanted to be. And when I went to, I took some courses at a community college in the summertime, and the advisor told me, have you ever thought about being a pharmacist? And to be honest, I had not thought about it at the time. And the first thing she said was, well, you don't have to be on call. You won't have to come in as much and work all that overtime. And now looking back at that, when you see people having to do that, sometimes you will have to do that. But she kind of gave me an alternative to kind of look at a different perspective. So while I still have my eyes set on being a pediatrician, I looked at pharmacy and I liked it because it was just, you can do so many different things. You can have a different job every 2 years if you wanted to. And it didn't just have to be in community or retail. Like all the things that you named, you can do all of those different things and still have your pharmacy degree. So that's what I like most about it. But when I told my parents, of course, I mean, they were supportive. My dad is a chemist and my mom is she's a professor. She teaches ultrasonography. So that the health and sciences are in my family. So they were very supportive of it. And even with my school was my high school was a very diverse high school that was centered around focusing on arts and sciences as well. So they were also supportive of me attending and going into this area as well, and provided all kind of resources that I could, whether would ever feel I chose to do. So once I applied for pharmacy school, I actually was on wait list for one particular pharmacy school. I was an average student, but I was well-rounded. I was in a lot of different activities, and I was in a lot of different clubs and organizations, but my grades were probably average, is what we consider average. So I was on the wait list. So I applied to Xavier University of Louisiana, and I got in. They took a chance on me, and I guess they saw something in me that the other school did not. And I was accepted. And it is a historically Black college university in Louisiana. And they nurtured me and helped me to become the pharmacist that I am today.
That's great. That's a great story. I bounced around myself deciding what I even wanted to do. I thought I wanted to go into public relations. Mm-hmm. I ended up getting into telecom out of a four-year school in business administration, Geneva, which is southwestern Pennsylvania area. And I was sheltered from the whole racism thing, the whole 60s period, but nothing ever really hit me personally until my kids' level, until I actually saw children, their faces, and being able to talk with them and being able to maybe understand from their perspective. But to this day, I still feel sheltered in our community. Our community is extremely diverse, but it's still out there. So I almost want to shift gears and now think of the professional, the healthcare professional that has experienced something with a colleague or a doctor or someone who's supposed to respect you, and it now becoming something that you know had been tied back to the way that they looked at you, the way that they treated you, and how this has made you feel. So I kind of want to dig into that uncomfortable sector of our conversation too.
Okay. Well, I will say that when I worked in community pharmacy part-time, I was in a, I would say a rural area of Indianapolis. It was a suburb that was rural. And I was the only Black face there that worked in this particular grocery store chain. And I was a floater pharmacist. So I would come to work there at night times, and every few weekends I would work there. So when the patients would come in, they would always ask to speak to the pharmacist. And I'm like, hi, it's me. Which was fine. You know, some of them were like, no, I want to speak to the real pharmacist, you know, the guy that I'm used to talking to, Ed, which is understandable because it's their community and they know this pharmacist. And I was the new Black girl that was now telling them that it was too soon for them to get their pain medication. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
So that was a big ordeal. And they wanted to file a complaint to me against Ed because the Black girl wouldn't give me my pain meds, even though I just got a refill 10 days ago. So I did get those types of things while working in pharmacy where people either didn't trust my judgment. They would either call the head pharmacist back because they didn't trust what I would say about a certain prescription or why they couldn't have it or why they should or should not take it. So I did get that a lot working in a rural area in Indianapolis suburbs from customers who were not familiar with me. And it could be, you know, it's more than likely to me it was race, but it also could be age as well. Cause let's not forget that ageism plays a part in it. I was fresh out of pharmacy school and here I am telling them what to do with their medication and they had never seen me before. Right. So I will say that as well, but it does make you feel as though sometimes it can make you question yourself. As far as, do you have what it takes to be able to counsel the patients and tell them what to do and tell them the right thing? If you're not given that same confidence that's given, you know, if you're not given that same confidence that's given to your other colleagues, or even you may have more, they may be given the tech more respect due to race as compared to me as the pharmacist, because they don't know me and they've never seen me before and they've never interacted with a lot of people like me. So that can play a role in confidence as well.
I have seen when I was on a plane, I can't remember where I was going. There's a period of my life before I went full-time pharmacy podcast in October of 2019. Before that time, when I started the podcast in 2009, I was always doing it as a side, basically audio blog. And it was, you know, an extra 10 to 20 hours a week of work on top of a 50 hour a week job. So I was always traveling. And I remember on a plane, a passenger having an issue. I couldn't see the passenger, but I heard behind me, I heard all the ruckus of the, you know, flight attendants and people running around, and they made an announcement. Is there a physician on board? Mm-hmm. And I heard some other people talking and stuff. And I saw a woman come from the front of the plane to the back of the plane. And then she started arguing with another man or something. And then after it was all said and done, it was landed. I got to hear a sidebar conversation when everybody exited the plane that this woman was a physician. She was a resident, and she had to argue for the first 3 minutes with this other guy who was like a, I forget what he wasn't a physician, about the, you know, being the physician. And so I've experienced in watching a male female dynamic, but I've never seen much of the race dynamic as much per se in the professional environment. Now, personally, like out at the grocery store or something, I've seen things that are, I've spoken up and I'm like, absolutely not. We're not letting that go by not saying something. Mm-hmm. But the men woman issue in pharmacy is almost not there because 62% of the pharmacists are women. So it's right. Like, are you about to pick on a woman, sir? Like, or somebody? Because I mean, this is a woman's industry per se. And I think we should, you know, praise that and raise that up in ways, because I think women have done things in pharmacy as chemists and compounders and different things that have taken place. Pharmacists, moms, you know, all of that stuff to really to really push the agenda of STEM and being able to give back to the kids and let them know that they can do what they want. However, in this time of our world, you made a really good point, and you said that we hadn't experienced this in our generation like our parents had. And that's actually true. When I thought of what you said, I'm like, you know what? They went through the civil rights movement through the 60s, but I almost feel like the cake wasn't baked. Like, I feel like we need to finish this cake and we need to heal the nation finally. And it's not going to happen overnight, but I mean, it makes me want to have a big block party picnic to bring everybody to, you know, our community, as many people as possible, and just love on each other. Because I want to start with police reform and law enforcement reform. And there are tests. I remember when I was taking vice president role sales positions, I took one for a company called Health MedX, which was an electronic health record. I worked in Missouri for nearly 2 years on this project. They made you take a psychological profile to see if you were a strategic thinker, right? I know, Dr. Stephanie, there has to be a test out there that we could give every single person in law enforcement to indicate if you have racist tendencies. Like, there's got to be a way to do that.
Yeah, that has to be. And I think that while some people are, you know, explicit in their racism, where you can tell because of things they say and they do, they are. But then there are some people who have implicit racism biases and they don't even realize it until they're put into a stressful situation or until they come in contact with someone, you know, that's Black or African American. They don't even realize it. So even some of those things sometimes may come out as well, that's harmful as well. So, but you're right, there has to be a test or something that will allow you to be able to identify that.
I don't know what the sequence is. I know for continuing education, I think pharmacists are required, is it 20 hours a year?
It depends on your state. For Indiana, it's 30 every 2 years, you know, which ends up being about 15 a year.
So I know law enforcement, FBI, CIA, state cops, the local police, they have to test, do weapon tests. They have to go to a shooting range. They have to shoot a specific amount, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's got to be a way in reform without it being a negative thing, but showing it as a positive thing, that they go back every 2 years or however, whatever the cycle is, that they kind of retest the law enforcement person to find out, hey, do you have these tendencies under stress? Like you said, because this is when these things are happening. This is when the egos come out. This is when, and by the way, I would never want to be a police officer. My brother-in-law was in the United States military. He was a Marine, and now he's going into the United States Marshals. And he has a very aggressive personality that I don't have, right? I'm not a good fighter. I'd rather dance. I'll do a dance off with you, but I'm not going to fight you because I'll be like, can we get a beer?
Right.
But he would fight someone. I wouldn't. So there's the tendencies that you, in some ways, you need an authoritative personality to go into this law enforcement, and especially if you're in the community per se, versus if you were an investigator or something. But there has to be a way to peel back an individual that is so responsible to de-escalate. Mm-hmm. But when I'm watching these videos and I'm seeing these stories and I'm seeing things that are coming out, it's the opposite of de-escalation.
Yes.
It's haunting. It's challenging. I've seen undercover videos of police officers to young Black men or young Black kids taunting them, you know, and they're even giving body language where they're being submitful. They have their head down, they have their shoulders slumped, and then the guy's getting in their face and taking the finger and poking their chest. And I'm like, that's not law enforcement. Like, those are the individuals based on the curbing of what's expected from a law enforcement professional to be professional. And if a pharmacist did things to a patient in the same context, they would be fired.
Yep, they would be fired.
your CVS, your Walgreens, your independent pharmacies, your long-term care pharmacy, if they treated a patient like that, they'd be like, get out. You know, you're done. We don't treat the people that way. So I don't see a difference.
Yeah. I think that, people need to, first of all, they need to know their community, be able to empathize and be able to realize, yes, you have a hard job. However, you are afraid of us, but we're afraid of you. And it should not be like that. You know, it shouldn't be like that at all in those communities. Where is it when you know your community so well that you know if someone calls for a certain house, you know that person may have a son that may have a mental illness. So therefore, when you go there, you already know this community, you know this neighborhood, and you know what to expect. You know that he's not a threat because you already know his family history. So I think it's more about being community policing and knowing your neighborhood and knowing and empathizing with the neighborhood is where it also comes into play as well. Are you empathizing with these people and putting yourself in their shoes as well?
Right. Absolutely. So talk to me about racial and ethnic healthcare disparities. And my understanding is there's this growing realization among healthcare researchers and clinicians, advocates, that there's a focus on healthcare disparities as an important aspect of really improving healthcare outcomes. Population health comes to mind. Mm-hmm. The activities towards improvement, we got to bring together those elements of insurance coverage and in population, education for diabetes, which is more prevalent in African Americans. And so kind of unpack that a little bit from your perspective.
So volunteering as part of being a board member for certain organizations in Indianapolis has really taught me things that we need to do or things that we can do as healthcare professionals to either increase health equity, which would in turn decrease healthcare disparities, because there are so many disparities that we don't even realize where Blacks have higher rates in death for certain diseases. And also when it comes to things such as, let's say, for instance, mortality when it comes to pregnancy. Blacks have a 5.2 chance of dying versus their white counterparts. And that's regardless of even education. So that's even women who are college educated. So a lot of people say, well, is this just related to socioeconomic? For this particular one, it's not. Now, there are some things that will have to do with economics, such as, you know, social determinants of health, those types of things that will affect a person. But when it comes to racial and ethnic disparities in pregnancy and related deaths, it did not matter your education. So it's important for us to see the types of things that may be affecting Blacks when it comes to healthcare disparities. Health equity is providing quality tools for individuals, regardless of who they are, so that they can have the best life that they can, or that they can have a healthy life. That comes from removing obstacles, which could be discrimination. A lot of people are surprised that discrimination does play into that, and also poverty. And then just making sure they have a fair and just opportunity to be healthy. So like you said, with public health and addressing those social determinants of health, one organization that I work with, one of the things that we really focus on is making sure that we're looking at social determinants of health, which is economics, the neighborhood that you live in, your health care, what are you dealing with socially, your stressors, your education level, your housing, transportation. All of those things will play into how you are affected, how your health is affected. So it's really important to address those as well. And of course, biases in healthcare. When you have either as a pharmacist or as a healthcare professional in general, what types of biases are you coming across to your patients that you may not realize, and what types of things are you implying to your patients that you may not even realize that you're saying that you're doing that may affect the way that you give care? Are you talking to them and asking them how their day was? Are you actually putting yourself in their shoes and talking to them about things that's going on in their life? Are you assuming certain things before you prescribe something, or are you not giving certain tests because you have a certain assumption about a race? All those things are very important when it comes to being a healthcare professional, when it comes to treating your patients as well.
Well, I'm glad you kind of unpacked that, because I had a hard time understanding where the differences were based on race in healthcare. What about access to healthcare? I think, you know, I've had arguments with people in my family on Facebook about this whole, is healthcare a right? Or is it, or should we be saying access to healthcare is a right? Because there was a paper done, actually, I'll put this link in the show notes with this paper, that actually I did a study on healthcare as a right versus access to healthcare as a right, and the difference between those two. And I think that almost plays into this whole conversation as well, which is, how are people getting healthcare? Are they getting it through their employer? If they don't have an employer, where are they getting it? Like, what's covering them? Is the frequency to them not feel that they can do a yearly checkup on themselves? Are they just like not even thinking about it? They're just like, oh, I don't have healthcare, so I'm just gonna, you know, not gonna even get a checkup. So I think there's aspects to that too that comes back to education and coverage. But what do you think of that?
Well, I think with insurance, of course, having access to healthcare means you have access to preventative medicine as well, which is so important to preventing some of these diseases. So if you can't afford healthcare, or if you're working in a job that does not provide healthcare, then you don't have that option. So it's important for us to make sure that people do have access to not just any healthcare, but to great healthcare. So in these neighborhoods, what are the ratings of some of the clinics and hospitals in these neighborhoods? Are there people that work in these hospitals that look like the community that they're in? Does it represent the community? Because it has been shown that if you have a physician that looks like you, or a pharmacist that looks like you, your conversations are actually longer. The patients feel as though they have been listened to and that they can be understood. So it's not that you have to have someone that looks exactly like you, but are you making sure that when you're speaking to your patients that you are empathizing and speaking with them in a way that they can either understand you? Are you talking to them longer and making sure that you understand what's going on in their home as well? And do you know your community? So it's really about knowing your community. But you're right, there are various places that have either what's called a pharmacy desert, where they don't have a pharmacy within a close proximity to them, and that is an issue. So pharmacy deserts, food deserts, all of those are an issue when it comes to healthcare. But having that access and making sure that the healthcare professionals that work at the in these communities are empathetic, they understand, they don't have bias, they understand the community that they're actually working in, and that the healthcare system is making sure that they're being trained is very important for us to provide those types of services to pharmacists and to other healthcare professionals as well.
What can we do as a pharmacy industry to be a voice for the underserved patient that experiences this? Or how do you begin to solve this issue of racial and ethnic healthcare disparities? What would your advice be to our listeners?
Well, I think that we really have to make sure that we are making it a priority and that we are recognizing it. Are we actually seeing that there is an issue, or are we talking about it and making sure that it's a priority that we fix it? And we also have to train our pharmacists and other healthcare professionals, and we have to make sure that they are getting the correct training when it comes to these types of things that are what's going on in the community and for certain races as well. And are we measuring the impact of that? So once we train and we implement those things, are we also measuring how we are doing? Are we getting better ratings from our patients? What are they saying about us? How does their health look? What types of things are happening because we did this training, because we're applying some of the things that we've done? And then it's also important to make sure that you have collaboration. So collaborate with the community, collaborate with organizations in the community that the people are actually, that they know and that they know by name. Have collaborations with them. It may be a health fair or food drive or food pantry or something else, but have collaborations with those people in the community and also engage with them as well. So I think that's very important as health systems for us to do that. But for myself, I actually made an acronym for healthcare professionals about what we can do for ourselves, because it's going to start with you. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen from reading one book. you know, it's going to take time for us to be able to change it as well. But what I don't want to happen is, like we said, we've seen our parents go through the civil rights movement, and now we're going through the movement now. I don't want my kids to have to do the same thing because we didn't fix it ourselves by just doing one thing every day. So just do one thing every day to change yourself and to change where you work and change your community. And I think that we can get there. But the acronym, of course, is LOVE. I think that we need to listen and learn to people in the community. Make sure that we are listening to what they have to say, listening to what things they're going through, and then learn from that as well. And then also, once we listen and learn, and we may see some things that we don't like within ourselves that may be an implicit bias that you may have been doing that you may not have realized, but try to omit that. So once you observe it, you need to omit it. And then make sure that we are being vulnerable when it comes to speaking with the patients and not just treating them as a number when they come in, but being vulnerable and opening up and speaking with them about their day and about how your day was going. And then that will also bring in value as well. So value their life, value their health, and that will help you have a better relationship. And then E would be to educate yourself. That may be just as you Google everything else, you may want to Google certain books that you can read or that can help you. And then also empathize as well with your community and put yourself in their shoes to see exactly how would you feel if someone either said this to you, or how would you feel if someone treated you this way when they came into your pharmacy or came into your hospital? So those are some things I think that we can do as individuals to just make sure that we're starting internally and doing one thing day by day to change it, because it's not going to change overnight.
Well, I tell you what, I was looking forward to talking with you, but now that I've talked with you, I want you to come back, because we have to kind of, we have to break this into categories. And something that Dr. Maurice Shaw, who is an amazing comedian, he's so funny. He was let go from Walgreens after, I think he was there like 7 years. And then all of a sudden, this new regional director let him go supposedly because of the comedy side of things too. That's all being unpacked. But nonetheless, he made comments about PBM reform, and I don't think people understand this is more than the money. It's also the fact that when you're pumping out and you're expected to produce 600, 700, 1200 prescriptions per day, and your technicians are on fire and they're running around and you're running around, you don't have time to meet with the patient.
That's
true. Chronic, it's on 12 meds, that has a rash, that it's just, you know, giving you the next prescription. You don't have time to slow down and do a review and listen to them and look in their eyes and hear what's going on, because you got 600 prescriptions in queue. So
that's,
I think,
true.
The PBM reform needs to be more than the fleecing of these community pharmacies through DIR fees and all the other stuff that's happening behind the scenes that the populace, the community, have no idea. They look at you as the pharmacist and they say, what do you mean my copay changed? Or what do you mean I owe you $35? This, you know, and then of course the pharmacist gets blamed for it, where it's the system behind the scenes that hides behind the scenes and are collecting multi-billions of dollars in profits, that we need to reset. We need to reset healthcare so that we're bringing the patient and the people to the center again, so that it's more about long-term health and not just taking a pill and hoping that it solves or stabilizes someone's diabetes or stabilizes someone's hypertension. But really, the pharmacist is so key. You're seeing your patients 10 times more than the physician. And if we could have access to a pharmacist's empathetic love of medicine and the empathetic love of the patient, mm-hmm. I think there's going to be better long-term outcomes.
I so agree, because, you know, I'm telling them to do all these things, and like you said, they have so many scripts to fill that you can barely even give a counsel out. So you're right, there does need to be more change in that as well.
Well, I really enjoyed having you. I need to get you back. You're more than welcome to to use this platform to push out any of the ideas that you'd like to get out to our professional base. We have so many pharmacists that will message us, and I want to give you an opportunity to tell them how to reach out to you and learn more about what you're doing and even network with you. I'm assuming you're probably on LinkedIn as well.
Yes, I am. I am on LinkedIn, but they can also go to my website at drstephanieyomo.com. That's drstephanieyomo.com.
Excellent. That's what I'm going to put in the show notes. You're going to have Dr. Stephanie's website, access to reaching out to her. Gotta have you back. We have to just continue to just talk, making sure that we're always double checking each other and holding each other accountable and responsible to holding up that oath that pharmacists took for the patients and for the patients' children and for the communities that you work in. And even if you're in a hospital system, it's absolutely the same. I have met so many passionate pharmacists in the health system space who still feel beat up because of the way that the system works. And that's not getting the most out of a pharmacist if you're beating them up all the time.
Right. I agree. So I'll be glad to come back.
I would love to have you back. It'd be great to have you back. So listeners, reach out to Dr. Stephanie Young Moss at drstephanieyomo.com. And Dr. Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on the Pharmacy Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You were listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation with Dr. Stephanie Young Moss. And we are so excited to have had her. And thank you so much for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.